real phenomenon, or whether it was introduced by the numerical processing that's been done to get from the raw spectra to the claimed results. And it's also very hard to tell whether, in fact, the phenomenon is imposed by the instrumentation itself. The authors of this paper argue, no, it's not instrumental, no, it's not anything that we did numerically. But the arguments are quite weak.
Well,
to follow up and redo this.
It sounds like, okay, when you look at 2.5 million stars, the very slightest inaccuracies in the instrument or some sort of systemic effect that's due to the instrument might show up like this and give you the idea that there's something going on that has to do with something beyond Earth, right?
Right, or even just the mathematics that you use. The Fourier transform's a particular mathematical tool. It, in fact, can give you problems sometimes and introduce things that aren't there. For me, the most incredible thing is that if these really are ETs, they have all decided to pulse at exactly the same period.
Yeah, a degree of cooperation you might not expect, particularly given the fact that they're separated from one another by, you know, maybe hundreds of light years on average, something like that.
Much larger than that.
All right, well then let me conclude by asking you, look, Jill, you've been doing this for most of your career. You've been looking for the extraterrestrials for a long time now. You're still optimistic that we're going to find something?
I'm still as optimistic as ever that we currently have the tools to conduct a scientific exploration to try and answer this very old question. And it is as relevant a question as it has ever been with all of the exoplanets and extremophiles and the universe appearing, over my career anyway, to be perhaps more bio-friendly than when I started. We are talking about habitable worlds. It's time to go see if any of them are actually inhabited, and maybe we can do that with radio telescopes and optical telescopes, and it's what we should be doing. And 50 years is 50 years. Big deal to the human, but not so much to the cosmos.
Jill Tarter, thanks so very much for joining us.
You're very welcome, Seth.
Jill Tarter was the director for the Center for SETI Research in Mountain View. She now serves on its board of trustees. Well, what we've heard in the show, Seth, at least one consistent theme, is that everyone would like to find aliens.
Yes, right. And by the way, that's a difference between those who think that they're here, and that's, as we've noted, quite a few people, and things like the SETI search, where we're still looking for evidence, because the former think that they already have the evidence, the proof that they're here. I mean, there's a lot of witness testimony, you know, pilots, astronauts, and certainly a lot of the public who say, you know, I saw something in the sky. But as Ben points out, most of that is pretty poor. I mean, you look at the pictures and the videos and so forth, and witness testimony is never very good evidence for science, even if the witnesses themselves are, you know, credible people.
So no solid evidence that the aliens are here, but also no solid evidence that they're out there.
Not yet. Nope, absolutely not. And that's, you know, you could say, well, all right, so we're kind of on an equal basis here. But as I say, there is this difference that the SETI scientists don't claim that they found evidence for ET, whereas the UFO crowd, of course, thinks that they have.
Well, thank you to the people who, despite never having seen an alien spacecraft land in their yard, to be specific there, never miss helping us produce the show. Senior producer, Gary Niederhoff, and operations manager, Barbara Vance.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, and to the William K. Bose Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science.
The magic of radio, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
The program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is retired Air Force Major George Filer. Major Filer was an Air Force intelligence officer. He holds a bachelor's degree from Bradley University, a master's degree from Central Michigan. He was the vice president of MedCorps in Princeton and debriefed four-star generals and congressmen on our capabilities and the threat to our forces while holding the highest clearances in the military. George is a member of Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, where on May 9th, 2001, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., he publicly testified to having encountered a massive UFO in the skies of England in 1962. George Filer does a weekly web newsletter called the Filer's Files, where he lists the most recent UFO sightings around the country and around the world. He is the webmaster of NationalUFOCenter.com, and I'm proud to say that he is a co-author, that I was a co-author and editor of his book, Filer's Files, Worldwide Reports of UFO Sightings. Major Filer was on this show in April of 2008, and we're happy to have him back again with us. Hello, George.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Fine.
Good. And, we're recording this just before the storm. Irene, that's the one?
Irma.
Okay.
Coming towards Florida.
Yeah, all right. That's followed by a couple others?
Right.
Yeah, bad news. Well, hopefully you'll be safe. You're in New Jersey, right?
Right. Well, we'll be right on the shore on the Atlantic Ocean next couple of weeks. So.
Well, don't go surfing, okay?
Right.
Okay. So, back to this. For those of you who missed Major Filer's account of the UFO in England, please reiterate that experience to our listeners.
Well, this is obviously, when I was in the Air Force, I was flying tankers over England, and we were off the coast in the North Sea refueling fighters, and we just finished up about 8 o'clock at night, but it was already dark, And London Control called us and said, would we be willing to investigate an unidentified aircraft? In any case, we started heading towards the area it was in, the Oxford-Stonehenge area, and London Control is clearing all the other aircraft out of our way because we're diving from 32,000 feet down to about 1,000 feet where the UFO was hovering over the general area there. And we got so that we were going so fast that we actually exceeded the red line of the aircraft and had to pull back the power. But as we got about 50 miles away, I got it on radar. And the radar was a huge return. In our normal navigation missions, we flew over the Firth of Forth Bridge, which is like the San Francisco Bay Bridge or the Brooklyn Bridge. It's a huge bridge about a mile long. Well, in any case, the UFO radar return was essentially the same size as this huge bridge.
What? A mile long?
Well, we don't know that, in fact, the craft was that long, but the radar returns were very similar.
Wow.
In other words, it was a very large craft.
Yeah.
And when we got, I don't know, 10 miles or so from it, we could see it off in the distance, and it looked like a cruise ship with all the lights on it.
Yeah.
Like it was a very large object. Then we got to about, I don't know, 5 miles or so, and it just, like, lit up and went off into space.
Hmm.
So we reported, you know, navigation log, and they said that we could go on with our mission, that it was gone now. We reported it to the Air Force the next morning, and nobody in the squadron seemed very upset about it or anything. As a matter of fact, a lot of people were kind of questioning if we really, you know, had chased anything. Well,
somebody knew you had chased it because somebody told you to chase it, right?
Right. Well, the interesting thing was that, of course, London Control had taken care of us for the whole mission and then let us go on with our regular mission. But at the officers' club at Sculthorpe, that weekend, the speaker was Prince Philip, the Queen's husband.
Right.
And he's all dressed up in his uniform and essentially is the top man in the Air Force and the Navy at that time. And he gave a speech, and then he said, you know, one of the air crews had chased a UFO last week, and I'd like to talk to him. So we sat down with Prince Philip and had dessert, and they passed cigars around. I had cigars. I really don't smoke, but in any case, we discussed UFOs, and he's very much a believer in UFOs, and he went as far as making a point to interview all the air crews or pilots who had seen UFOs, you know, over England. And I asked him why he personally was interested in UFOs, and he said that his uncle who had raised him, Earl Mountbatten, who had been the former viceroy in India and also head of the Navy, had seen them up close. And that when he saw them, many of his associates had seen them. Additionally, later on, he wrote an autobiography and said that a UFO had landed on his estate. So
That's kind of England's...
Prince Philip was convinced, I was convinced.
Yeah? It's kind of England's way of, you know, why don't they land on the White House lawn?
Well, this was pretty close to it.
Yeah, England's version. But if Prince Philip's, did you say uncle or father?
Uncle.
His uncle had this experience.
Right.
And then all of this was going on before 1947, wasn't it?
No, I think it was after the Second World War in the 50s, yeah.
Oh, okay. So what year was this again that you had your experience in
mine
England?
Mine was 2002.
In England?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, so I'm thinking it was back, you know, like 70s or 80s.
Well, let me see now. I had another experience in 2002. Maybe I'm confused. Actually, it was 1962.
1960, that's what I'm thinking.
Right.
1962.
I've had...
Okay, so tell
they've
us.
Been hanging around me for most of my life, to be blunt about it. From the time I was a child, my mother saw them. My grandfather was a... chiropractor and lived in L.A. and the big, you know, you might call it the war with the UFOs over L.A.
Yeah.
And I think that was 1942. In any case, he saw that. So my parents and grandparents, well, just treated UFOs, you know, as something that were real. And frankly, that's been my whole life is believing in them and seeing them. And if you watch for them, you might be surprised.
Really?
Often they're around.
Well, some people claim that they can call these UFOs, will them into being. I don't know if you will them so hard that you imagine that they're there, or if they actually hear your telepathic desire to see them or experience them in some way, and so they accommodate you by showing up. You believe
that? Dr. Greer and his group does that.
Okay.
With the 15, 20 of them, people may call it praying or
right.
trying to reach out to them, and they claim they show up. And we did it once in Philadelphia with a group of people, and something showed up. I'm not sure it was a UFO, but it flew right over Philadelphia at about 200 feet right above us.
200 feet, that's low.
That's what it appeared to us, and there's, 15, 20 people that watch them.
And all of them testified to that.
Right. Side, well, there's a... I used to attend a group at Dr. Jacobs' house in Philadelphia, who was a professor at Temple University, and he taught a course in UFOs.
David Jacobs.
And so... a lot of us were associated with him, and actually my daughter attended his class. And again, he was handling a lot of abductees, and we said, well, actually it was kind of like one of the persons had, you might call it a message, that they would be over this particular park and Philadelphia at a particular time and a particular date. So we figured, well, we'll go and see if it shows up, and something, in fact, did show up.
Wow. Yeah.
And my wife was there, and a lot of other people saw. Now, it's at night, you see lights fly over, but you don't normally see a craft fly over Philadelphia at very low altitude.
Well, I was going to say, if anybody knows what aircraft looks like, it should be you. And did this object we're talking about...
triangle of lights.
Okay. And did that look like anything you're familiar with?
Yeah, the TR-3B.
Okay. I was going to say that people say, at least they used to say, that was... Our military prototype. It was a new prototype. That's what you saw. And but they don't say that anymore because people kind of caught them on that, because we say, okay, if that was ours, fly over, give us a place, a date, a time, and do a flyover. Well, we can't do that. Why can't you do that? Well, it's a secret prototype. Well, number one, if it's a prototype, I think it's well out of prototype stage. And number two, you just flew it like the Phoenix Lights. You just flew it over the entire state of Arizona. How secret can it be? So we kind of.
I think we do have some, at least prototype.
Oh, probably.
That look similar to UFOs, and that they've chosen not to release to us, but
possibly. And where did they get that kind of technology? Where did we get that kind of technology?
Well, it appears they got it from the aliens.
There you go. Now you mentioned the 2002. You got the England one mixed up with the 2002. What happened in 2002?
Well, pretty much a similar story, but we were flying along, and actually it was kind of like flying formation off to the right of us, about a mile away, but for an extended period of time, like an hour or so. And you could see it fairly plainly, you know, and the whole crew could see it, that almost like it decided it liked us and hung around. And if we speed it up, it would speed up. If we would turn, it would turn, but mm-hmm. always keeping us approximate distance from us.
And what was the official explanation on that one?
Well, I'm not sure we even... And we always write it down in the navigator's log, so we have like a, you know, information on it.
Right,
but we didn't report it, you know, publicly.
Well, did
you? We did about it on the radio.
You did talk about it on the radio?
Yeah. Well, but, you know.
Were you debriefed on this?
Usually when we fly the Atlantic or the Pacific, far as that goes, we go on what we call nat tracks. And it's like the best route across the ocean as far as the winds are concerned. So you save fuel. But so you might have an American Airlines plane in front of you and an Air Force plane behind you and, you know, another one behind. We'll say United Airlines behind that. You can see the three or four planes in a row. And
but do they pace you? Do they?
Well, the UFOs seem to be pacing us off to the side.
Off to the side.
But, I mean, we could tell by the lights and everything on the aircraft that these were aircraft there in front of us and back of us.
Hmm.
But the one off to the side was... very different. Looked like a disc.
So this was over the ocean. This wasn't
right
in England or in U.S.
Well, on the way to England. You know.
On the way to England.
We used to land at Milton Hall. On, I don't know. There's a lot of craft over England. We get roughly 50 reports a month.
Really?
From England. Mm-hmm. People don't realize, but Mutual UFO Network gets almost 1,000 reports a month between its reporting system and the National UFO Reporting System, often over 1,000 reports a month. And people spend like a half an hour, you know, typing in all the details of what they saw and so forth. And we figure we're only getting maybe a third of the actual reports, and yet there's a large number all the time.
Most people.
Although it goes down usually at Christmas time, apparently they go home at Christmas.
You're sure it wasn't Santa Claus? I'm going to have to take I'm going to have to take a break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 FM. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with retired Air Force Major George Filer. And we were talking about the number of reports that come in, something like 10,000 a year, isn't it? The UFO reports?
Yes.
Most of them can be explained, but there's that sliver of those that cannot be explained. Am I right?
Well, it's kind of like, but you could always say that they're, you know, normal aircraft or some such thing. But
but when they don't,
one thing is that usually the UFOs tend to hang around. Where if you think about it, look in the sky and you see commercial airlines are going from point A to point B, and they pretty much fly. You know, from horizon to horizon very quickly. And I live not far from Philadelphia Airport. Even when they're going in for landing, it's pretty much straight in and out. But the UFOs frequently hover over a particular area, or else they're doing a lot of maneuvers, you know. Jumping up and down, going to altitude and descending and going right down to the ground, that kind of thing.
Yeah, then you say, ooh, that's probably not an airplane.
Right.
Yeah.
I moved into my new house, and 80, and it's kind of like
2008?
The UFOs went down, that I moved from one place to another, and I was here, I think their first or second night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, the whole bedroom lit up.
Wow.
Like somebody had a huge flashlight was shining in the window. Well, I looked outside because it woke me up. Mm-hmm. I live on a lake, and I could see a craft surfacing. Look, just you've seen pictures of submarines surfacing, and looked just like that, except it was a disc-shaped object with multiple colored lights,
mm-hmm.
and just coming out of the water. And later on, when that sounds funny, but later on when the lake froze, I got out with some lights and put it around in a circle, and it turned to match what I saw. It turned out it was 25 feet in diameter based on the lights and so on. And kind of like welcoming home.
Yeah. It's you said it was 2008?
This was 1980.
Oh, 1980.
We were in a dinner club, and we would visit different people in Bedford.
Okay.
And almost all of them lived on lakes, different lakes than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, I started mentioning people that had seen UFOs,
mm-hmm.
and they started mentioning to me almost every time we had a dinner evening together, mm-hmm. be like 20 people in the group, mm-hmm. who lived on various lakes, and almost everyone in the group had seen UFOs going getting out of the water.
Yeah.
But the average person doesn't know this, but they frequently hide underwater, mm-hmm. during the daylight.
Yeah, I had many guests on that talked about the USOs or unidentified submerged objects, submersible. What is it? Submerged or submersible? Same thing.
Either one.
Either one. Anyway, the Mariana Trench. That's a great place for them to hide, eh? Way down there, but you don't know. There was the one in. Canada, famous one. Which, what am I trying to say? Where it landed?
There's one in Newfoundland.
In Newfoundland, kind of yeah.
Famous story.
And it went down underneath the water and moved right along. And didn't it come up near a military base and take off?
Well, they went in after it. They thought a plane crashed or something.
Yeah.
We're talking about the same one. The interesting thing about it was that priests got involved, and it turned out that the priests are sending similar UFO reports to the Vatican, and they have a vast storehouse of UFO reports. As a matter of fact, several cardinals and so on have discussed the fact that the UFOs are here and
that
there are brothers and so on.
Space brothers, all children of God, they say.
Right. Yeah. And I met Dr. Mack at Princeton University and became friendly with him,
mm-hmm.
Dr. John Mack,
mm-hmm.
who actually was from Harvard, a psychiatrist at Harvard.
Right.
And he was working with Dr. Jacobs with abductions and so on, and he became convinced that UFOs existed. And interestingly, somehow he had a contact with the Dalai Lama.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, he made a movie with the Dalai Lama. Actually, you can see it on YouTube. And the Dalai Lama said that the UFOs were here, that the aliens were here, and in fact, he implied that he had visited with some of them.
Really?
I'm just saying that I mentioned the Dalai Lama because he and the Pope and so on are considered, you might say, above lying.
Yeah. And, if the Pope and the Dalai Lama are going to are going to testify to it, who are we to say, you know?
Right. My point is, and of course, the average person doesn't know, but President Carter, President Reagan, other have admitted that they've seen them and actually mm-hmm. even chased them mm-hmm. you know, in their aircraft. So the point is that, and obviously in the Air Force, like I'm the president of the Air Force Association in New Jersey. Actually, I'm the chapter president now, but I was a state president. Mm-hmm. And I used to go and visit with the general who ran Fort Dix or McGuire Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me that his air crews report the UFOs on a regular basis. And that, when I was there and flying with him, I saw him on a regular basis and reported him. You know, the public is not aware of that, but the fact is that the military sees them just like everybody else.
Oh, yeah. In fact, even more so. It's their job to keep an eye on the sky. I suggest every show keep an eye on the sky, but it's you guys' job to keep an eye on the sky, am I right?
Right.
Speaking of McGuire and Fort Dix, tell us a story that you told quite a while ago about the alien that landed in Fort Dix.
Right. In January 1978, I was the Assistant Director of Intelligence at 21st Air Force Headquarters. Mm. And I would go into work early in the morning, like 4 or 5 in the morning, and prepare a briefing for General Sadler and the staff. It's very much like the evening news, you know, the half hour of the evening news of what's going on in the world.
The summary, yeah.
And in any case, as I came in the gate, they stopped me and made me show identification and stuff, which is unusual because you have indication on your car that your Air Force, you know, that they normally just send you through, wave you through. Mm-hmm. In this case, I wanted to see my ID card and stuff. And as I drove on base, I looked over towards the runways, and there's all these, what looks like fire trucks, you know, and ambulances and everything on the end of the runway. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe there'd been an accident. Well, I go into 21st Air Force Command Post, and as I walk in, they grab me immediately and say, there's been a UFO landing at Fort Dix, and that the alien who was inside has been shot, and the UFOs are hovering all over the base, you know, in the sky, that they're seem to be very upset about it. We want, when morning briefing, we want to brief General Sadler about them. Well, General Sadler was didn't have a real good sense of humor, so I decided I better try to check this out further. So I called the Wing Command Post and also the Security Police Command Post and talked to people there, and they confirmed that the story was true, that a UFO had come down and at least one alien had got out, and and he had been shot at Fort Dix, and then he headed through the fence over to McGuire Air Force Base and had been found on the end of the runway and died at this point. Hmm. Then they said that a C-141 was coming in from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to pick him up.
Wow.
And which was surprising to me. Well, in any case, before the briefing, the plane came in and apparently picked up the body and took off. And they said, well, don't brief in the command post. There's like 50 to 100 people in there for the briefings. That's, well, considered too highly classified.
Hmm. So you couldn't brief your boss on it?
Well, not openly.
Oh, okay.
And that, so I went down after the briefing, essentially to talk to him. Mm. Some of the intelligence is so highly classified that you don't even talk. You just allow them to brief some things.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, in any case, when I went down there, the head of security police was there, and he was all kind of disheveled, you know, with a, needing a shave and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially said that he had briefed the general about the aliens. Now, interesting, I called him several years later, and he kind of denied everything, so I don't know. But he said, if you want to talk about that, come and see me. And he was in North Carolina.
Okay, so he didn't say, I don't know what you're talking about. He didn't say, you must be dreaming. That never happened. Or it's just, if you want to talk about that particular incident, it'll have to be a face-to-face. Is that, do I have that right?
And now I used to brief about the fact of, for example, I don't know if you remember the case in Tehran, in Iran, where the UFO was there in 1976, and they launched two F-4s, more or less, to attack it, and they tried to fire their weapon systems, and they did not operate.
Right.
That kind of a report I had briefed General Sadler and the whole staff before, and they didn't seem to mind those kind of reports.
No, because it happened over there. Iran. Who cares, you know?
Well, let's put it this way. When I would brief about UFOs, nobody got too upset. But if one's on the base or whatever, in an actual body or something, they get they don't want that briefed openly.
I hear you. Now, you were a member of Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project. Are you still a member of that?
Well, I don't know if there's an actual membership, but I attended the briefing. There's about 30 of us, ex-military, general, and people from the FAA, and in other words, who had opportunities to see or be aware of the fact that UFOs exist.
Yeah.
No, there's cases, for example, we briefed there were Japanese 747 over Alaska had spotted a UFO.
John Callahan, right?
Right.
Yeah, if you can get me in touch with John Callahan, I'd love to have him on the show, too.
Yeah, I pretty much lost touch with him, but I can check around.
Appreciate it.
That, in any case, there's a lot of people that are in positions of importance. He was the head of accident investigation for the FAA, and that was aware of, UFOs being sighted and maybe involved in accidents. Although I'm not sure there's any actual, you might say accident where they've hit one of our planes or something. There's been possibilities, but I don't think it's ever been actually declared as a fact.
I've seen people
seeing them. My Captain Ramage was my boss in Athens, Greece, when I was in there, when I was stationed there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the Korean War in his B-25, and he actually had a UFO come up on him and do barrel rows around his aircraft.
Really?
Right.
Show off?
Right.
Yeah.
I've had other colonels and stuff tell me that, they had chased the UFOs, and they chased them right down on the deck, and so low on the deck that the, for example, it was in Georgia. Do you know how there's this red dirt down there?
Right.
Flying so low over the fields that the red dirt would come up and hit his windshield, and he's chasing the UFO in front of him.
Hmm. Wow.
I get lots of stories like that, and also a lot of radar people. The radar people, you know, particularly when people retire, they'll call me because of my you know, weekly files and tell me that.
Oh, they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it while they're still working. But if they're retired, yeah, right.
In any case, they often report that they, well, there's like a steady stream of UFOs that come down the Pacific Ocean coastline.
Hmm.
And they would, their radar site was in Oregon, and they pick them up, you know, 300, 200 miles away, and then they would land down in usually Northern California.
Really?
So the fellow was saying that so many times he'd seen it land on this one lake in Southern California, they decided when he had a, you know, some time off, he drove down to that lake. In any case, he didn't see any UFOs, but he saw other things that made him believe that the UFOs might have landed there, you know.
Such as?
Broken branches and, you know, and high in the trees, right. and what appeared to be landing sites. And then in the newspapers, there was lots of reports of these giant people who are, you know, covered with fur and so on.
Really? Like Bigfoot?
Yeah, like Bigfoot.
Hmm.
He wasn't sure that they were actually Bigfoot. They may, in fact, have been aliens. He didn't, he didn't know for certain, you know. He's just saying that he's following up where he knows that they apparently are landing. And there's all these Bigfoot sightings in the newspapers.
That's
nothing on UFOs, but plenty of Bigfoot sightings.
Yeah. Well, I've heard of a lot of Bigfoot sightings and UFOs in the same area at the same time. Is there a connection?
Well,
are these?
You can make an assumption that there's a connection.
Yeah.
Now, I had a. Sounds funny, an Indian tracker in Ohio called me, and I just happened to be going out to Ohio, and I said, well, I'll stop in to see it. In any case, he had a report of a UFO landing and some kind of creatures getting out, and then after that, as a Indian tracker, he was tracking Bigfoot all around his house and in the forest and along the streams and so on. In other words, there wasn't a direct connection in one sense, but it was about as close as you can get unless somebody took a picture of him coming out of the UFO.
Yeah.
And so, he had the tracks. He had the pictures of the tracks. As a matter of fact, he lived with the forest behind him, and he had taken, he just had a feeling, and he started taking pictures of the forest behind his house. And when you examine the forest pictures up close, it appeared that a Bigfoot was in the in among the trees.
Wow. Yeah, now, I've often wondered if you know, the reason you don't find deceased Bigfoot. Or big feet, I guess that would be.
Right.
You don't find them, the bodies, the corpses, is because they come in UFOs and depart in UFOs.
Well, it may or may not be true. It could be one of the types of visitors that
right,
we have.
Right. Like Wookiees, you know.
Right. It's in the. Well, in the movies, you know.
Right, right. Maybe that's where they got that inspiration for that movie. I need to take another break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And that's 89.3 FM on the right radio. So you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. And we're speaking with retired Air Force Major George Filer. And we're talking about his experiences. And we were talking about Bigfoot and Wookiees and and the possibility that Bigfoot's an alien. What do you think? What do you think, George?
Oh, I think it's certainly possible. I don't have any, you know, real proof other than it's not unusual to get simultaneous reports, you know, mm-hmm. saying UFO landed in such an area and Bigfoot was seen.
Mm-hmm. So you were telling me, you told me on the phone recently that you have had conversations with retired Air Force officers who claim to have had communications with ETs. What were those like?
Well, this one major was out at, well, what's called Area 51, but that's not exactly where it is, but in general area, you know, mm-hmm. S4 or whatever.
S4, yeah.
Claimed that he was in contact with the blonde, blue-eyed...
The Nordics.
Aliens.
The Nordics,
and they were
yeah.
claiming that... they were our ancestors.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that public may not be aware of it, but they can go on Google Earth and go to China, for example, and there's almost 200 pyramids on China, which are 10 to 12,000 years old or may even be older.
Mm-hmm.
And buried near those pyramids are blonde, blue-eyed people.
Oh, wait a minute.
With white skin.
How do they know that they're blonde, blue-eyed people if they've been buried for so many years?
Well, they have pictures of them, and they have blonde hair. I don't know for sure how they know they had blue eyes. But they still have the blonde hair that you can see in the pictures. The hair has stayed.
You say they have pictures of? What kind of pictures?
Yeah. You can look online about, you know, Chinese pyramids and
right.
so on, and there's a rather famous lady, I've forgotten her name, but in any case, they show her, she's, you know, like 3,000 years old, but she still has her blonde hair and still looks fairly nice, you know.
The mummified.
I don't know how she can be that well preserved, but apparently she has been through the years.
Are they mummified?
What was that?
Are they mummified?
Apparently, yes.
Oh. Well, I still don't know how they'd look that nice, but okay.
Interestingly, a recent scientific report came out of Denmark, where a lot of blonde, blue-eyed people live.
Yeah.
And it said that tracing the DNA that 10, 12,000 years ago, people in Europe and actually all over the world had dark hair, dark skin, and dark eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, so to speak, started showing up these blue-eyed, blonde, white-skinned people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now they didn't say anything about aliens or anything, but I kind of put it together that somebody built all these pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over the world if you start looking for them, often even under the sea.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say under the sea, yeah. They think
and the pyramids in China, at least, many of them have, it's like pipes inside them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're obviously old, and the pipes went underground and often ended up in a lake.
Mm-hmm.
And, we don't know if the water that is falling on the pyramid is drained off into the lake or vice versa. They're bringing up water from the lake to be used perhaps as part of the propulsion system because the oxygen and hydrogen, which makes up water, can mm-hmm. be used for propulsion.
All right.
Or else maybe it's just for washing dishes or
taking a bath,
clothes or something, or drinking or whatever. But in any case, it's quite interesting.
Well, I have
pipes.
I jotted down in my notes I guess I didn't know what I was talking about here. Water where UFOs landed healing horses. What was that about?
Oh, right. A lady called me who lives in Medford, New Jersey, who lives on basically a horse farm. And her life's work, so to speak, well, she had been a real estate lady and was fairly successful. And she noticed that a lot of horses were being killed that were young, like race horses that are hurt themselves and they're shot, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So she started taking in these crippled horses. And she noticed that they would go into a pond behind her place and seem to be healed. So she started checking around and about the property. And right near the property are these great big powerful power lines.
Right.
And in the paper in 1969... there was a picture of three UFOs sitting over the power lines. And she had a friend who lived next door. The friend said that, oh, that one of those UFOs landed in your back yard where that pond is now. Apparently, when they landed, they sunk that area down or they chose that area. In any case, it was the lower area in the... she has, I don't know, must be like 10 acres or something. Any case, where the horses go and get healed. They said, that's where the UFO landed. So I went out there and with boots and everything, and I went into the pond and I dug up the soil at the bottom of the pond and at the edge of the pond, and then about 100 feet away. We sent them into the MUFON lab. And I haven't got the full report, but the lady said in our initial, you know, lab indications was that there was no bacteria in the pond. She says that's utterly amazing. If you have horses in there, they're liable to go and so on. That there should be bacteria. She can't understand why there's no bacteria. Well, whatever in that pond is very strange and seems to be helping the horses. When I say horses, she also has sheep and other animals. But interestingly, people who have heard about this have had cancer and gone into the pond and, according to her, have been healed.
Really?
So we've got... strange thing that we're trying to check out.
So the rain will come down and fill that area.
Right, the low area.
And because of probably the energy that's in the earth because of the UFO landing, it affects the water in that way.
Nothing will grow there.
Well, that's fine.
In other words, there isn't any vegetation or, you know...
Well,
so far, it looks dead, frankly, you know.
Well, do me a favor and bottle up some of that water and send it to me, and I will drink it and give you a report. How's that?
Yeah, it looks dirty, but I mean...
I'd hate to strain anything out because maybe that's the properties of it, you know.
Well, also, we found... on the bottom of the, I didn't find it, but previously it was found, what appears to be pieces of a meteorite. In any case, the lab is checking on all this, so if I find anything exciting, I'll let you know. As a matter of fact, I'll put it in my files, you know,
appreciate
the weekly files.
Yeah, sure. I do the newsletter for Michigan MUFON, and... that would be a very interesting article, you know?
Yeah. I assume you get my weekly files.
Oh, yeah.
You're welcome to put anything in there.
Appreciate it.
You would like. And if anybody wants to get my weekly files. We get about, send out about 35,000 copies now. That all they have to do is write majorstar@verizon.net, and I'm happy to send it to them.
Majorstar@verizon.net. And your website there is?
NationalUFOCenter.com.
NationalUFOCenter.com. And all your newsletters archived there?
I don't know about all of them, but
a lot of them.
For many years.
Yeah.
I have 20 years. It'd probably fill up the... I've been putting this out for 20 years. So.
It would fill up the whole web, wouldn't it?
It's about 25 pages a week. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite good. So if our listeners are really interested in recent sightings, write to George Feiler. Give your email address again, George.
Yeah, majorstar@verizon.net.
Majorstar@verizon.net. And ask for those, and he'd be glad to put you on the list. And donations are welcome.
Each week we try to have, somebody important, for example, the Dalai Lama or
right.
Carter or some general or admiral mm-hmm. that's been willing to talk about this, quote them.
Right.
People are surprised how many important people have, in fact, seen UFOs that made quotes about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw one, and
even President Ford.
And I'm important. My mother loved me,
That what's kind of strange is that this information is covered around the world in news media,
right?
But is not really covered in the United States.
No, that's right. That's right.
You happen to live with what people don't realize is a very strong propaganda machine.
Really?
In the United States.
Really? Can you imagine?
Particularly on the national news.
Can you imagine my surprise? He said sarcastically. But
I have people don't.
Yeah, we just had a little glitch here that I had to edit because we were talking along. George was talking about the propaganda machine here in America, and boom, the phone went out. I had to call him back. So someone's listening, Big Brother, huh?
You never know.
Or aliens, you don't know. Anyway, yeah, you were talking about the fact that all over the world they pretty much accept the UFO phenomenon, but well, they do in America too. They just don't tell us about it. They really.
Well, it's not on the nightly news or anything. No. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but I remember when David McDonnell was the head of MUFON. He went to Europe, and they had a big UFO conference, and the head of is it GIPAN? Is that Europe's equivalent to our national security agency?
Well, I know in France, treat it as a real phenomenon.
In fact, they treat it so seriously that it is a felony to give a hoax report. You can report your UFO sighting, but if it's a hoax, you can go to jail for that. That's how serious they take it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's what David McDonald was telling us. So anyway.
I don't know. The news media doesn't cover a lot of things. They don't like certain people. They don't like policemen. Whoever they don't like, they really give a hard time to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What can I say? Go ahead.
Well, how I came into first class was I went to Vietnam, and there were saying, get in there and fight those dirty communists. And they came back a year later, and they're saying, you dirty American fighting those poor communists.
It depends on whose side you were on, right?
On the news media decided they didn't like the war anymore. And
yeah. Oh, well, you know.
Well, I notice they always say wonderful things about all the drugs that they're pushing on people.
Yeah, I think doctors have stock in the pharmaceutical companies. What do you think?
Well, also they never say anything about the Mexican cartel that's killing thousands of Americans.
Yeah. You don't know.
Kind of surprising.
So what do you think the alien agenda is, anyway?
Well, one that I was told was that these blondes, supposedly their planet's sun is wearing out. You know, it's getting old. Mm-hmm. They're from within this, more or less the center of the galaxy, uh-huh. And they're, so many words, in a sense, millions of years older than ours. And their sun is wearing out, where ours is a comparatively young sun. Mm. So they've gone around looking for a place to live and to come to on Earth and feel that it's one of the nicest planets, certainly in this part of the galaxy.
And that might sound a little far-fetched to a lot of people, but in reality, that's exactly why we Earthlings are going out into space. Am I right?
Right, and their big concern was that as humans, we're wrecking or ruining the environment of the Earth, and they're very concerned about that. Right. Certainly nuclear weapons and power plants and all that that they keep on warning us about.
Yeah. George Filer, give us once again your website.
Yeah, National UFOcenter.com.
Very good. And ask George for to get put on the list for the Filer's Files, and you'll keep up to date with the latest UFO sightings. George, I appreciate you joining us today.
And anytime.
I hope we can do it again.
And have you ever... I used to have a TV show, and every so often my guests in the show.
So if my
mom was ready to talk about, you know, the last week's files or whatever.
Well, you're certainly not the the go-to guy in case if somebody doesn't show. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Okay, wait. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows,